The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
The last quality that's in this gladness pentad that we're talking about today, which is concentration. So you remember that it goes gladness, joy, tranquility, happiness, and then concentration. And you know, we just saw in the meditation that these qualities of well-being really support a settling of the mind. So let's look a little bit more at what that's about. The Pali word that we're kind of casually translating here as concentration is samadhi. And, you know, many people associate that word somehow with deep meditation. And of course, that's probably the main technical meaning of the word. But the qualities that are associated with samadhi can come to pervade our whole life in various ways. It's not only about sitting on the cushion. And so I want to highlight these qualities. So the mind with samadhi has a lot of wonderful qualities and benefits. It has all the other things in the pentad that we've been talking about, which essentially amount to happiness and calm. You know, that's the summary of the pentad, if you will. And so a calm and happy mind is steady in the face of the ups and downs of life. And it also has a way of seeing clearly. I think some of the comments we've had today have highlighted these very qualities, is that it has a certain steadiness, and then it also has a clarity. When the mind is happy and calm, it naturally just sees better than when it's not in that state. So we could say maybe that it's also undistorted. So we end up with a set that goes calm, happy, steady, undistorted, as qualities that can really exist anytime in life, not just on the cushion. And lest you think these are kind of obscure, I want to read a quote that came in a message from a non-Buddhist friend of mine. She's not even a practitioner. And I'm first going to read the nut of what she wrote, and then I'll give you the context that it was sent in. So she wrote, "You can put a shocking amount of positive energy and goodwill into the world just by being calm, consistent, reliable, and pleasant." Now, that sounds a lot like calm, happy, steady, and undistorted, when I read that. And so, but let me now read the whole sentence that she, the whole message that she wrote. "I just finished watching Jeopardy with my mom. You know, if there's any lesson to be learned from Alex Trebek's life, it's that you can put a shocking amount of positive energy and goodwill into the world just by being calm, consistent, reliable, and pleasant." So there you go. Alex Trebek as modeling the qualities of samadhi. You may know that he passed away a few months ago. I don't know if he was a practitioner, but he was certainly calm, consistent, reliable, and pleasant, if you've ever watched Jeopardy. And so I like that my friend identified that these simple qualities have a benefit in the world, sometimes in surprising ways. So, you know, we may not be calm, consistent, reliable, and pleasant every moment of our lives. Most of us are not. But nonetheless, it's a very useful part of Buddhist practice to cultivate some of these qualities and have them pervade our life in various ways. So other conditions also support the cultivation of samadhi in daily life. Probably the biggest supportive condition besides the ones we've named so far is continuity of mindfulness. So just maintaining a steady awareness throughout the day can have a tremendous impact on our ability to settle when we do get to the cushion, and also our ability to weather the inevitable upsets and inconveniences that come about in life. The more steady we are in the mindfulness, the less likely those things can knock us off kilter before we notice and can have the wherewithal to deal with them. So continuity of mindfulness is good. So your regular mindfulness practice is also very supportive of all of this. In addition, we can pay attention to the other qualities that surround samadhi in our life, because it is possible for samadhi to be a little bit misdirected. And the Buddha pointed out that there can be not only appropriate samadhi or samadhi that supports the path, but also various kinds of inappropriate samadhi if we're not careful. And so essentially, this means that the concentration or the collectedness of mind is flavored by greed, hatred, or delusion. And there are everyday examples of these. You know, a pickpocket is probably very concentrated on his or her task, but there's a lot of greed involved in the wanting of the wallet that they're going for. Or you may be very concentrated on a work project and really, really focused, but the underlying motivation for that is fear about your reputation if you don't do a good job on this project. So there's concentration flavored by aversion of a certain type. And then there's TV, like if you watch 27 episodes of Jeopardy in a row, for example, we might have a concentration that's flavored by delusion. So, you know, it's kind of a passive kind of, dull kind of steadiness, shall we say, which is not quite what is meant by samadhi. So I think we can we're not in grave danger of falling into these severely if we're a mindfulness practitioner, but it is good to be aware that these little flavors can come in and we can watch for those. I do remember a story about a practitioner who was talking to another teacher, and she was very excited because she was doing a remodeling project and had gotten really concentrated on the floor plan and gotten really into like all the different possible floor plans that she could have and all the ways in which they were going to be good or bad or, you know, serve her purposes well or not, or too expensive or, you know, and she talked about how all these considerations had gotten her really well concentrated on the floor plan. And so she asked the teacher if that was a good example of samadhi in daily life. And she said, well, the samadhi you can have like that, or the samadhi you can have by, you know, developing the jhanas, for example, the main difference between them is that one leads to liberation from suffering and the other leads to a really great floor plan. So, you know, she made a little bit light of that. But nonetheless, samadhi in daily life is important, and we can check in to cultivating more of it. So all of this is pointing toward the benefits that come of having some of these qualities of samadhi in our life. As you can imagine, a mind state like this has tremendous benefits, both for us and for others. Being free from the kind of frenzy and distraction and tension that occur often in our busy lay lives is wonderful. And then it affects others. If we're calm, others can more easily be calm. If we're speaking more wisely and acting more wisely and listening better, then we're automatically affecting others in positive ways too. And then there are even some specific benefits for ourselves that I'll just name a few of them of samadhi. One of them is that samadhi is tremendously healing. It has a way, you know, because it's a unified mind state of mind and body and heart, like you might have felt in the meditation that we just did, kind of becomes all connected together. It has a way of healing and smoothing out the rough spots that we have in our mind and some of the rifts between the body and the mind. So, you know, we may not need to do sort of specialized healing type practices if we have a strong cultivation of samadhi. These things can be good as supplements also, but this in and of itself is probably the way within the Buddhist teachings that all of that comes about. And then in addition, there's not so much friction in the mind. A mind of samadhi is kind of smooth and it operates highly efficiently. We'll find that we can stay on tasks longer and do them with fewer mistakes and just a lot of extra clarity. In addition, sense pleasures become less seductive. So this can be a good thing. We don't get as distracted by these things that otherwise can kind of obsess the mind. You can really get hooked on wanting something, and then we can't focus on what we're doing because we're always wanting this thing. It somehow just doesn't happen as often when we have these samadhi qualities. I'll touch on that again in a moment. But probably the main, and this is now kind of the path-related reason for samadhi, is that it prepares the mind for insight. You know, samadhi helps the mind see very clearly, and this nourishes wisdom, which then leads to insight, which is what we'll talk about in the next class, actually. We're setting ourselves up for that. So let me go back briefly to this idea that sense pleasures becoming less seductive. That might sound not very appealing at first glance, but we can also ask what gets opened up when that seduction is gone. You know, what could we see or hear or do if we weren't caught up in getting what is pleasant and avoiding what is unpleasant, which we spend a lot of mental energy on every day. So if those things become sort of less of a major concern for us, we actually free up a lot of energy to do all kinds of other good things. So that alone is a wonderful appeal. And I'm going to read a poem now that maybe, let's say, unifies a lot of the themes I've just been talking about. So this poem is called A Man Lost by a River. There is a voice inside the body. There is a voice and a music, a throbbing four-chambered pair that wants to be heard, that sits alone by the river with its mandolin and its torn coat and sings for whomever will listen a song that no one wants to hear. But sometimes, lost on his way to somewhere significant, a man in a long coat carrying a briefcase wanders into the forest. He hears the voice and the mandolin. He sees the thrush and the dandelion, and he feels the mist rise over the river. And his life is never the same for this having been lost, for having strayed from the path of his routine for no good reason. So when we're not listening to the siren song, if you will, of conventional pleasures, we can hear the quieter music of the heart. We might even call it calling. So samadhi creates this space, creates a space where we can do effective inquiry, hearkening way back to the first class when we talked about inquiry. We're preparing our mind to receive something other than our usual karma-determined, pattern-influenced inputs. And we're preparing our mind to put out something other than our habitual reactions. So we can start to do something different than what we've always done, which means that our life will start to have different results than what we've always had. So the happy and calm mind is flexible, responsive, bright. It's able to see clearly, and it might just see something totally new, like the man who wandered off and got lost by the river. So next time we'll go more into this wisdom and insight, what it is that we see from this. But we're going to continue on with this exploration of the heart and the connection between samadhi, heart, body, mind, happiness, freedom, with another set of small groups. So this one is a little bit creative in that you're again going to be in groups of three or four, and you'll have 12, 13 minutes, something like that. But the hope is that you'll just have a discussion among the group of you about some words from the poem, which I'm going to copy now into the chat. And you'll be able to see them when you get to the breakout room because the chat is still there. Let me put them in the chat here. Can you see that? And his life is never the same for this having been lost, for having strayed from the path of his routine for no good reason. So the question is, what are some ways that we could interpret this that are relevant to Dharma practice? What do these lines have to say that would be relevant for Dharma practice in some way? And please just make sure that everybody in the group has a chance to contribute. You don't have to be a literary scholar. You don't have to feel like you know what you're talking about or that you understood the whole poem and so forth, because it's really speaking to your heart, and you've all got a heart, and whatever impression it has is correct for you. So please share it and maybe build up kind of a mosaic in the group of different ways that this could be interpreted relevant to Dharma practice. So enjoy. Diana can send us off.
Welcome back. It's nice to see you all again. And of course, we're going to do a little bit of a debrief. Is there, did you get this poem all figured out, what this person is doing beside the river? Some of you are nodding your heads. Yes, fantastic. I'd love to hear, and Kim would love to hear. We'd love to kind of see how was that, even to this idea of interpreting a poem together and maybe using a poem as opposed to a sutta allowed some creativity or a different way to engage with the material. Or would anybody like to share either some of the things that you came up with or the process itself? What was it like to kind of explore with people that perhaps you don't know to be exploring this topic together? So if you want to raise your hands, your literal hands or your Zoom hands. Yes, Claire.
Yeah, I just want to say I think it was a really special way of interpreting. I'm in a book club, and so I get that there is, you can really pull a lot more out of a text in a book club, but it's almost more intense, the process of just a few lines of poetry. So I loved the process and being in a supportive group and being able to kind of tease out the meaning, but I also love the poem itself, just the magic. Like, we just kept coming back to like grace and magic and this really special image of this guy who has just, this music, this magical music has brought him out of his head or out of his routine, and the grace of the universe has helped that happen. And so I think it was just a beautiful poem and a really cool process too.
Thank you, Claire. And of course, we'll get a copy of the poem in the email that comes after this class. Anybody else have a comment? Yes, Catherine.
I noticed that our group used the sense of coming to the group with those skills that we were thinking about before, of being open and listening to each other and inquiry, asking each other questions. And so our group demonstrated having been affected and using a group process that showed that we listened to the teaching from the homework. Nice group.
Thank you, Catherine. I think all of us discovered there's beautiful people here, right? And I'm sorry, Kim, I didn't ask you. Do you have something you'd like to add? No? Okay. Bess.
There we are. I just wanted to say that what I liked about the poem was, one of the things, was that all of the little events that happened were rather small and not, I mean, not ordinary, but they were all rather small. There wasn't like a thunderbolt or a rainbow or, you know, something really overwhelming. And I just think that points to that leaving, diverting from the path that you've always been on can be in a small way, and then another small way, and then another small way. And I just really liked that aspect of it.
Thank you, Bess. Beautiful. Kim, do you have anything you'd like to add? Or no? Kim, I'll keep an eye on you, and you can unmute yourself, and I'll... I don't want to monopolize this, my beautiful, wonderful co-teacher here. Does anybody else have a comment? Dawn, was that you raising your hand?
Yeah, it was. Great. Thanks. I was thinking about, you know, the context of the whole poem of how he heard the music and is just kind of like just gently drawn. I mean, that's how I viewed it. He was just kind of drawn to discover what the music was. And I was not hung up, but what I noted in the piece that we had was the part of For No Good Reason. And in looking at my own being drawn on this path, it wasn't for no good reason. I was, you know, sharing that it, you know, it came from a place of, you know, of discomfort in my life and looking that I needed to make a change. And so that was a slight difference that I saw in between the poem and my own practice. But I know that now that I'm doing this, there is that kind of magical being drawn along the way in a certain direction, just being pulled by something that isn't necessarily always explainable.
Nice.
And there's always something beautiful at some point.
Yeah. Thank you. Some would say that the Dharma, right? Kind of this is the Dharma, is the unfolding of the Dharma has that feeling. Thank you.
Yeah, it's quite classic in the Dharma that people come to practice through the heavenly messengers of some kind. Aging, illness, and death being the classic ones that wake us up, but it can just be any kind of suffering. I know a lot of people who come to the path through dukkha. It's what helps them discover it. But then, yes, there is, you know, as we've talked about today, these states of well-being also play a big supportive role. We don't want to only be looking at the suffering.
So maybe one last person, if they have a comment, and then Kim has a few words for us as we end. But let me just take a minute. Yes, Reese.
In our group, one of the persons mentioned what I think is the very most important part is the manifestation that it changed a person's life. I thought that was great. And I did not like his long coat or his briefcase.
Thank you, Risa.
Okay, well, great. I think we had a wonderful session today. There's going to be, as usual, some suggestions for things to try out during the week if you're interested. We'll send you the sutta that was used in Diana's talk about the naturalness of things unfolding from one to the next thing. And so you'll have that as a reference, and it includes this pentad, among other things. And then the reflection to using your life is to consider this naturalness. You know, is there a way in which it's very natural that when you are aware that you're behaving ethically, that you would feel a sense of non-regret, and from that would flow a certain gladness, and then onwards through the joy, the tranquility, the happiness, the concentration. You know, do you experience this as something natural? The sutta emphasizes that one does not need to exert any volition, essentially, to do each of these things. They will just come. Not that there's no effort involved in the path ever, but that there's a way in which these things are natural or related to each other. So you can see that. And then we're also going to send a handout that has, in case you didn't get enough lists with our list of Pentad, it's gonna have a bunch of lists that have samadhi in it. Because samadhi is actually the quality that might be in the most lists. It's either that or energy. It's not, I haven't seen an exact count, but it's in a lot of lists. And so we'll send a few lists that have samadhi in it, and highlighting that often the factors that come before samadhi are similar in different lists. It's not only this pentad, there are other similar qualities that often appear. And so you can look for the presence of those other qualities in your life also. And that's all, I think. Next week, we'll be on to wisdom and insight as our kind of third realm of teaching. Oh, Chris, you have a comment.
Well, the comment is, and I don't know if this is appropriate, but just to let the group know that you two, along with two others, are leading a sutta class starting this Saturday. And I don't know if there's any more room. I've done two of them now, and they're really quite wonderful. It's equally a fun group, and you can't beat these two teachers, and there's two other teachers. And it's a little bit of investment of time next week, but I was just going to throw my support in if there's still room in the group.
Thank you, Chris.
You want to say anything about that, Diana?
So we will be looking at portions of the Mahaparinibbana Sutta. This is looking at the final days of the Buddha. What are some of the teachings that he gave? How did his followers react? How did he die? What were some of his last teachings, and what were the way in which he died? So we'll be looking at this, and thank you, Chris. Well, Kim and I are teaching with Ying and David, and the four of us, we love practicing and studying and teaching together, so it's a group of us, and it'll be, the format will be kind of similar to what we've done here. Oh, and Kim just put in the chat box if you'd like to do that. So it's Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So four classes in 1 week. So it's a little bit more maybe an intensive or something like this. And for those of you who are familiar with the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, don't worry, we're only doing a portion of it. It's the longest sutta in the whole collection, so we're not going to try to cram the whole thing in. So,
all right. Thanks, everyone. Have a wonderful week.
And we'll see you next
week. Feel free to unmute.
Bye. And thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Be well.
Be well, everyone.